Hi, and welcome to Unit 6, HIT Facilitated Error Cause and Effect. This is part of Component 7, Working with HIT Systems. The objectives for Unit 6 will focus upon error in health and healthcare that can be facilitated and propagated by HIT, different classes of HIT errors, such as slips, mistakes, errors of omission, errors of commission, will be discussed and differentiated. Specific scenarios that create opportunities for HIT facilitated error will be presented to students in the lab exercises. In these exercises, students will apply concepts learned in the didactic portion of this unit to identify error, classify error, analyze root cause, and propose solutions. So medical errors have a number of causes. Most healthcare settings are very busy, and clinicians are often very busy with multiple patients, multiple tasks, and many distractions. The phones are ringing, pagers are beeping, alarms are alarming, and the thought process is interrupted and mistakes happen. So, for example, what is illustrated here is common to many clinicians in busy clinics or offices. There are distracting noises. There's that messy paper chart. There are huge stresses and strains on memory and so on. So you can see this nurse questioning herself. Did I give that dose of insulin? Who was that they were paging? Uh-oh, is that my patient's monitor that is alarming? What'd the resident do with the chart? It's not hard to imagine how these sorts of situations lead to shortcuts, errors, and missed opportunities. So now this next slide contains a link to a video that would be beneficial for you to watch. It does require an internet connection. So this is a video from YouTube that illustrates an avoidable medical error involving the Quade twins. So this link was accurate as of August 2010. And perchance that you click on the link and it is not available, or if you need to come back at a later time and watch this video, you can do a Google search on the subject matter of Quade twins and medication error, and you'll end up getting a lot of hits on this particular news item.
The mix-up that Dennis Quade speaks of is easily illustrated here. Look at these bottles. I can easily see how someone could have mixed them up. Thinking back to the distraction, the rush, the load, of course one could say that the nurse should have been more careful. But I pose this question. Why are two bottles of the same medication with massively different doses, both in the same size bottle with a blue label and stored in the same medicine drawer? This is a design problem. How does it relate to health IT? Just like medicine bottles, health IT that is not thought out, not well designed, not based in user-centered design, is bound to cause similar issues. You, as a health IT professional, need to be on the alert for poor design, whether it be a medicine bottle or an EHR that could result in disastrous consequences. You are part of the critical safety net. What do I mean by stuck in thinking? This is when people do the same thing over and over again because that is the way they've always done it. Things are changing all the time in medicine. Processes change, medications change, procedures change. And if clinicians are stuck in a way of thinking about something, it can contribute to error. Well-designed health IT can begin to influence this. For example, a provider who routinely orders a particular brand name medication is offered a generic equivalent that has the same pharmacotherapeutic action, but is less toxic to the kidneys. And oh yeah, it happens to be half the price. Moving on, let's think about the Ash et al. Article. It is a terrific article for this unit. It's where the term juxtaposition and unclear directions were introduced. In this article, in a particular health IT system, clinicians frequently committed juxtaposition errors. This error occurs when something is too close to something else on the screen and the wrong option is too easily clicked in error. In Unit 5, we talked about the small font sizes and clustering drugs together, where the first couple of letters are the same. Add an 8-point font to that, and juxtaposition rules. In the Ash et al. Article, the following transcript was presented. I was ordering corticosporin, and corticosporin solution and suspension comes up. The patient was talking to me. I accidentally put down solution. Realized that's not what I wanted. I would not have made that mistake or potential mistake if I had been writing it out because I would have put down what I wanted. Putting all these things together, we start to see how error can happen. So what does this have to do with health IT, you say? Well, when you are designing systems or just considering which system to buy, these are the things you need to think about. Clinicians are busy, distracted, multitasking, tired, and tiny print does not work. Have your users act out scenarios with the system and make them realistic and tough. Start ringing the phone. Have plenty of interruptions on hand and ask them to complete an example task. You may see where the health IT system might contribute to potentiating error. Later in this unit, we will see another video where the unclear directions comes directly to the fore. Error in healthcare also occurs when roles change, communication changes, and workflow is altered. For example, when CPOE was first being introduced in the healthcare industry, remember that CPOE is computerized provider order entry, the change in the ways of doing shifted profoundly. Nurses were used to the prescriber verbally discussing changes in orders or conferring with other members of the care team, and then writing a physical order in the chart. Ward clerks would transcribe the order, put it in a pneumatic tube, and ship it to the lab. There were numerous areas where communication occurred, and by the end, several different members of the care team knew when something changed in the patient's plan of care. No more. A prescriber can change an order from off-site by logging into the EHR, change an order, and the other members of the care team would not know unless they happened to open the EHR. Orders go directly to the lab or pharmacy or wherever. Oftentimes, the first alert that something has changed is when a new medication physically arrives on the floor and everyone stands around and asks, "Who is this for? Why did this get delivered by the pharmacy? When did the order change? I just gave her the 10 a.m. dose of the prior medication. I didn't know it was changed." Workflow, roles, and communication have changed distinctly. Of course, there are good things that are happening here, like elimination of bad handwriting, reduction of filling out forms, and the like. So I'm not saying these are bad changes. They are just different things. And when change happens, error can sneak in. If an EHR is integrated into existing workflows without regard for the changes they will induce, you can end up with the so-called unanticipated consequences or bad downstream effects. There are numerous reports of healthcare personnel exhibiting undue trust in computer-generated recommendations also. The point to be made here, and I suggest you tuck this into your head and use it frequently, is that a computer does not replace human judgment. It only augments it. Ultimately, the person makes the decision, and liability for a given action rests, most of the time anyway, with that person. The advice provided by a computer is only as good as the person who programmed it there in the first place. If a person programs the computer to round up, then the system will do that, and often with grave consequences. Errors in healthcare come from problems with currency and appropriateness. A medication that is considered safe today is suddenly pulled from the market. And we need to change all the systems that incorporate that particular medication quickly. If a decision rule exists that suggests the use of the now no longer safe medication, what is your plan for getting that change instituted in all systems that contain that rule? If it's in a centralized location, great. But we know that many of the systems in use today are distributed and they don't talk to one another. Does this mean multiple off-site trips to update the rules? How are you going to make sure no site or system falls through the cracks? This is a huge problem in health IT, keeping the rules, the data, the algorithms all current. If not, error propagates extremely fast with just the touch of a button. Appropriateness is a challenge as well in medical error. Humans are unique. Situations are unique. We operate in the 80-20 rule space. What might be appropriate, efficient, safe for one person may be totally off base for another. Users who accept carte blanche, the health IT output, are exposing themselves to liability and exposing their patients to error. Prescribing a medication that requires refrigeration for a certain condition may be best practice. But if the person is homeless in Phoenix, blind adherence to inappropriate guidance is not an indicator of high quality care. Alert fatigue is a common contributor to error in healthcare. Constantly alarming monitors desensitize providers. Just like the boy who cried wolf one time too many, over-alarming results in the ignoring of safety measures that are designed to avoid error. Take a walk into a modern ICU. The cacophony of alarms, pagers, beeps, whooshes, overwhelming at first, soon becomes unheard or, as a workaround, users turn them off because they are alarming for nothing, right? What about the day that they're not? Finally, systems that are so rigid that they force a usage pattern that is counter to safe practices can be disastrous in healthcare. One only needs to investigate the increase in pediatric mortality. One only needs to investigate the increase in pediatric mortality at University of Pennsylvania Medical Center to see this in action. In brief, meds could not be ordered until a patient was admitted to the hospital, which sounds reasonable on the surface. But what happens with an emergency admission from an ambulance with a baby Jane Doe? Medications were not able to be ordered because the patient was not admitted. The mortality rates increased. A rigid system designed to reduce error ended up resulting in death. Rigid systems also result in workarounds. For a busy user, delays, extra clicks, nonsensical diversions or questions will bring out the creativity for circumventing them. The point of all this is that the complex nature of healthcare work both creates and hides errors, which can be nearly invisible or silent. Health IT can further potentiate that if you do not approach with eyes wide open.
There are several ways to define errors, and these are a few terms you should be familiar with. There are errors of omission and commission, and just as they sound, an error of omission is defined as an error which occurs as a result of an action not taken. For example, when a delay in performing an indicated cesarean section results in fetal death, or when a nurse omits a dose of a medication that should be administered, or when a patient's suicide is associated with a lapse in carrying out frequent patient checks in a psychiatric unit. Errors of omission may or may not lead to adverse outcomes. Commission is defined as an error which occurs as the result of an action that is taken. So examples include when a drug is administered at the wrong time, in the wrong dosage, or using the wrong route, surgery is performed on the wrong side of the body, and transfusion errors involving blood cross-matched for another patient, things like that. Mistakes, on the other hand, reflect failures from incorrect choices rather than lapses or slips in concentration. Mistakes typically involve insufficient knowledge, failure to correctly interpret available information, or application of the wrong rule. So, for example, choosing the wrong diagnostic test or ordering a suboptimal medication for a given condition would represent a mistake. A slip, on the other hand, would be forgetting to check a medication against the chart to make sure that you ordered those meds for the right patient, or starting to reconstitute a medication and realizing you grabbed the wrong one and then you throw it away. So usually slips are caught, whereas mistakes usually occur. So distinguishing slips from mistakes serves two important functions. First, the risk factor for their occurrences differ. Slips often occur in the face of competing sensory or emotional distractions, fatigue, and stress. Mistakes, on the other hand, more often reflect a lack of experience or insufficient training. Second, the appropriate responses to these error types differ. So reducing the risk of slips requires attention to the designs of protocols, devices, and work environments. So maybe using checklists so key steps will not be omitted, or trying to reduce fatigue among personnel, or shifting high-risk work away from the personnel who have been working extended hours. You can remove unnecessary variation in the design of key devices. You can eliminate distractions like phones from areas where work requires intense concentration, and other redesign strategies. An interesting strategy that is being tested currently involves something called the cone of silence, or the silent cockpit, similar to that of pilots on takeoff and landing. So, for example, when drugs are being mixed, measured, administered, no one interrupts the person doing the activity. So, reducing the likelihood of mistakes, on the other hand, again, as I mentioned before, mistakes are things that actually happen, and they more often reflect the lack of experience or insufficient training. So a strategy to reduce the likelihood of mistakes typically requires more training or more supervision. But even in the many cases of slips, healthcare has typically responded to all errors as if they were mistakes, with remedial education and or added layers of supervision, when in reality, the more appropriate action is to look at the design that encouraged the slips. More education will not help faulty design. So take what I have presented so far and carry it all over to healthcare, and then add HIT on top of it, particularly HIT that has been built by well-intentioned but non-clinically savvy people. There's a very interesting video here on the slide. It's called Oh Schnocks, and it is a perfect example of what I mean. Again, I am sure that these systems were built by very well-meaning people, but you will witness firsthand the frustration of a clinician who cannot figure out the interface to HIT. So I refer back to the work of Jacob Nielsen that we discussed earlier, and also available on the web, where we see the six components of usability. In the Oh Schnocks video, we see the consequences of violations of those principles. So think back to those six usability components. Wasn't really that long ago, folks. Learnability, efficiency, memorability, errors, satisfaction, and utility. Think about those things and then watch this video. How many can you identify? So the Healthcare Human Factors Group from Canada's University Health Network actually produced this short comic video that gives a sense of what it's like to deal with all the gadgetry in a modern hospital. So these clips come from the hospitals, from the group's own in-lab usability tests, where doctors and nurses are closely observed to see how technology could be improved to increase safety, ease of use, and efficiency. At the time of recording, the video link that was on the slide was active and live. If you find that you go to watch this video and it is not, again, you can go to Google and just Google the Healthcare Human Factors Group from Canada University Health Network, and the name of the video was Oh Schnocks. So is all lost? No. As an HIT professional, there are ways to address the issue and to obtain a deeper understanding of the problems. As you're working with HIT systems, you may bear the brunt of user frustration as HIT is introduced and becomes a mandatory way of doing business in healthcare. So here is actually another short video, and it has absolutely nothing to do with HIT, but it does have everything to do with solving these sorts of complex issues with humans. The long and the short of it is that if you don't understand how people will really use a system, and if you don't work with them from the get-go, and you do not design or buy a system that was built with the user in mind, you're going to end up with Oh Schnocks. So watch how Mayo has addressed this. How could you model what you see in the video in an office that is implemented in EHR? Again, thinking back to the prior assertions, you may not be able to change something that's already in place or a large system that millions of dollars have already been spent on to install, or you may not be able to alter the decision of an executive whose mind is made up. That does not, however, excuse you for not understanding the fundamentals. As the HIT person, users will confront you, and then they'll ask you questions like, why do I have to go to the start button in Windows to shut down? And other similarly baffling questions. And it's your job to have a basic level of competency and literacy when it comes down to usability, HIT facilitated errors, and methods that can be used to either reduce or prevent these from occurring in the first place. Also on this slide, so the video link is there in just a moment. I'll have you click on that and watch the video and then come back and finish the slides. But also on this slide, I want you to see the formal definition of human factors from the International Ergonomics Association. This is their definition from 2000. It has not changed. And I'd like you to look at that and think about the way that this is written. So it says, ergonomics or human factors is the scientific discipline concerned with the understanding of interactions among humans and other elements of a system, and the profession that applies theory, principles, data, and other methods to design in order to optimize human well-being and overall system performance. So think about these words, understanding of interactions of humans and other elements. So think back to the very, very first material from Component 7 when we talked about systems and bottlenecks and how an action in one area of the subway system can cause a domino effect in another area of the subway system. Same thing in HIT. A misrepresentation or a typo or a seemingly innocent rounding up function in a drug calculation can be propagated across thousands of users with a single simple keystroke. Human factors in HIT is equally concerned not only with the interaction amongst humans when they use a system, but also about the downstream effects. So ultimately, human factors is about designing HIT and only buying systems that have been designed with the user in mind. And those systems have been built by those who both understand the system of healthcare and the downstream effects, so that the product that you end up acquiring and implementing is highly usable and it results in high quality, efficient, and safe patient care. So anyway, click into this human factors video, watch it, and then come back and finish out the slide deck. So to finish out, how can we help to avoid error in HIT? HIT can help to reduce error, but only if it's well designed and appropriate for the task at hand. Like in aeronautics, they learned very quickly not to put the eject seat button next to the emergency brake button. So we need systems that are easy to read, they're easy to understand, they're logical, they support, not thwart, cognition, they're agile and flexible, they help to prevent error, and they make the right thing to do the easiest thing to do. So to conclude, is it easy to assure usability and to build systems that support busy clinicians? Absolutely not. User-centered HIT design at this moment in time, unfortunately, does not get top billing. So you are going to encounter some really faulty products out there. You will see oschnocks in real life, and you will have frustrated users barking at you. So having the fundamental knowledge of how HIT can prevent errors is just as important as understanding how it facilitates error. A knowledgeable HIT professional will be able to identify the issue before it emerges, or will be able to determine ways to address the aspects of low usability systems that actually spawn new classes of error. Your value as an HIT professional depends on your ability to help users make the best decisions, whether this is in supported usable systems that help them to do the right thing and prevent them from making errors, or helping them to inform purchasing decisions. If you see something like this coming your way, not a good idea. Don't buy it. It also requires that you be assertive and brave. It may fall to you to identify areas where HIT error can creep in and actually diminish safety. Thank you. This completes the slide deck for Unit 6, HIT Facilitated Error Cause and Effect, part of Component 7, Working with HIT Systems.